This is Digital Story Podcast number 775, January 26, 2021. Today's theme is What to Do with Your Old Digital Camera. I'm Derek Story. As time marches on and we acquire new gear, there remains the question of what to do with our aging cameras. Unless it's a relatively new model, chances are good that it isn't worth much on the used market. So then what? I present some ideas on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I think a lot of people are thinking this way right now, which is I'm trying to limit the amount of excess stuff in my home and at work. The reason why I think a lot of people are thinking that is that when I do a run to Goodwill or Salvation Army to donate things, they are full and sometimes even say, we can't even take any donations right now. We have so much stuff. So clearly, I'm not the only one that's been working on this during the pandemic. Others are thinking along the same lines, which I think is great, We'll sort it all out. What to do with these things. In fact, we're going to be talking about that a bit today. It's interesting, though, that in the goal to, limit stuff, excess stuff, how much vigilance it takes, right? This is something that I have to stay on top of. I've learned that if I slack off just for a while, let's say just like for a year, I don't do any thinning. Suddenly, I notice things piling up everywhere in my closet, on the shelves, and I'm going, oh my God, how did I get so far behind in such a short time? And I think to some degree that speaks to the churn that we have, with things in the digital age. Phones don't last as long as they should probably, or we don't keep them as long as we should, although I do keep mine for quite a while. Cameras, same thing. In the film days, a SLR camera would be good for, 7, 8, even 10 years. Now, of course, we're thinking about a new camera after just a year or two. Things like that. So I think the digital age has really sped up this churn that we're all kind of looking at. And if you're environmentally conscious at all, let alone adverse to being buried in stuff, then, you've got to come up with something. You have to come up with some sort of plan to deal with these different things. I think that cameras, for me anyway, are in a different category than a lot of other stuff. For instance, a lot of things can be recycled and recycled somewhat efficiently. Some things can actually be thrown away, when there's no hope at all of them being used or repaired or whatever. Some things can be donated. But digital cameras have this unique niche in this challenge that isn't as easily managed as, let's say, even an old computer, okay? First of all, they tend to still work, right? I mean, these things are, generally speaking, well-made and can take pictures for a long, long time. And just because a camera doesn't have the latest specifications doesn't mean that it isn't usable. We have probably just moved on a bit, more megapixels, better dynamic range, more features, faster autofocusing, all that sort of stuff. Another thing that kind of complicates this is that digital cameras often represent a sizable investment. I mean, they're not cheap. We have to work hard to pay for them. And, whenever you work hard to pay for something, that occupies a different spot. I'll give you an example with kids. When they first start driving, they usually drive their parents' car or a car that is loaned to them by their parents or something like that. And it's so funny how the car is dirty a lot. It accidentally backs into trash cans, things like that. Things like that happen. And then when they're forced to buy their own car with their own money, suddenly that car is washed all the time, is vacuumed on the inside. They're not running into trash cans anymore. And you're just going, same kid. what was changed here? And what was changed is that, you know, they have a personal investment in the new car that they did not have in the old car that was just loaned to them or given to them. And I think when we pay money for things, for instance, our digital cameras, then, you know, that has it occupy a place. And when we pay a lot of money for it, even a more special place. And then there's the whole emotional attachment thing. And I think this is also unique to cameras in that if we have a trip of a lifetime or if we have a special moment at a family gathering, things like that, emotional thing, things that really strike a chord, and we use a particular camera to record that moment, to capture that moment, then that camera holds a different spot, at least for me, in my heart, than, you know, the phone that was in my pocket or, you know, the shirt that I was wearing that day or any number of other things. That camera was used to, you know, take that wonderful picture of my great aunt or to capture the beauty of the Grand Canyon on my first visit or any number of things, right? I think there's an emotional attachment that we add on to the financial investment and then the fact that they still work. This presents kind of a conundrum for some of us. And what do we do with these things? I mean, we're not going to throw them away, right? I mean, that would be crazy. We can't sell them for what we want. So what do we do with them? Well, I've worked up some ideas of things that I do with my cameras. If you guys know me by now, then you know that I like to recycle. I like to reuse. I like to repurpose. And so cameras definitely fall right in the middle of, you know, that intent. So I have thought about this and I have a number of things going on with my older digital cameras. I'm going to share some of those with you right now. Now, the very first one, I have five ideas. The very first one is really piggybacks on what we talked about last week with infrared photography, which I think is such a wonderful pursuit during the pandemic because it shows you the world that you have seen a million times outside your front door. It shows it to you in a new way. And, you know, that's exciting when you've been sheltered in for a long period of time. A great way to keep an old friend by your side, that camera that is not your primary camera anymore, but you're not quite ready to part with it, is to convert it to an IR camera, to an infrared camera. There's a number of different ways to do that. The company that I prefer is Kolari Vision, and I'll have a link to them in the show notes. And you can look it up on their site and see exactly how much it is to convert the camera and how well your camera converts and all that kind of stuff. They're really good at detailing that out for you. You get that back from them, you know, now either a full spectrum camera or converted to, you know, a specific slice of the electromagnetic spectrum. And then you have something that you go, man, I'm bringing that with me now. I'm using that now. And it doesn't really make any difference if it's only 12 megapixels or only 16 megapixels, because you're doing, you know, specialty work with it. And the cool thing is that your existing lenses will work on it and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And you know how to use the camera, right? Because you've used it for a long time. So I think this is one of the best uses for an old friend that you're not quite ready to part with, but is not quite up to the task of being your primary go-to camera. The second thing, and I've been doing this more recently than I ever thought I would, which is swap it for other gear that you need. You know, a lot of times photographers know other photographers. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you about some of my swaps right now because you might think, wow, you didn't do so well on that, did you? No, I'm not going to do kiss and tell on my swaps. But I will tell you this, that swapping gear with someone else where you have something that they want or that they're interested in, and they may have something that you want, that's kind of a neat way to go. It's kind of a neat way to go. And, you know, at first I was a little nervous about it, but every time that I've done it, it has worked out really well. And there's no money involved, which is really good, you know, right now during, you know, this time for a lot of us, while we're still in the middle of the pandemic, especially people that own their own businesses and stuff, where it's really tough right now. Cash is tough, but we may have inventory. We may have things that are of interest to other people. So swapping for other gear that you need actually turns out to be a very good use of these older cameras. Knock on wood, I have had really great luck with this, and has helped me pursue things that I may have had a difficulty getting into otherwise, or had a hard time justifying, but by swapping for that gear, then I could. The third thing, donate it to education. This is something that I've learned more about since I've been running the film camera shop, is that for a lot of students that want to get into photography, especially at the JC level, but also at the high school level, a lot of times the biggest barrier for them is getting the gear they need to pursue their interest. For instance, at a JC, the class is very affordable, or sometimes doesn't have any tuition at all. Same thing at high school. So you can take the class, but you need a camera that works for that class. And they have a hard time getting their hands on it. Well, what I've discovered is that a lot of times junior colleges and high schools will accept donations. They go to the photography department or the art department, and then they can be used by students who aren't able to get their own camera, but yet need something that works really well. And they don't need state of the art. They just need, you know, a good functional camera so that they can learn photography. So donating to education is a terrific way to go, and it can not only help one person out, but it can help many people out over the remaining lifespan of that camera. The fourth thing, and this is something that I'm also doing a fair amount, which is find a specialty use for it. Now, the example I'm going to give you is with my Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II. This camera I used for a long, long time. I really like this camera a lot. I still like this camera a lot, but I don't use it in the field any longer for a couple reasons. One is the lower megapixel count. It's down at 16 megapixels. And for my work, I like to have a little bit more. I like to be at least at 20, so I have a little room to crop, things like that. So the lower megapixels has prevented it from still being my primary camera. And then the other thing, the battery door on it doesn't work perfectly anymore. I think a little piece of it broke off or something. But I have the external battery grip, which is really cool for the OMDs. Now, again, I'm not going to carry the camera around with that battery grip on it all the time in the field because it makes it bigger than I want to carry around. But here at the studio, it's not a problem at all. And in fact, it makes it even easier to change the battery than using the little door that's on the bottom of the camera. And then I don't have to worry about the door on the bottom of the camera anymore because the battery grip goes up over it. And I've got this really nice functional door on the battery grip that works perfectly. So adding the battery grip to this camera solves that problem as well. So it's too big to carry around, doesn't have all the megapixels I need. The buffer isn't as fast as I would like, you know, especially for action shots. So I'm going, what am I going to do with this camera that I really like that takes great pictures, but yet, you know, isn't quite there for my prime camera? What I'm using it for is taking studio shots of products, doing product photography with it for the film camera shop and for my posts online. And for that, it's perfect. You don't need more than 16 megapixels for online work. You don't even need 16 megapixels for online work. So I have no problem with that. And since I'm working, you know, with a little Lightbox studio thing, I don't have to worry about having to crop a lot and all that because I get exactly where I want to go. And it works perfectly. It works perfectly for that. In fact, what I've done is I've put the Leica 25mm f1.4 on that lens. It just lives on that camera now. And I'm using that lens plus the OMD EM5 Mark II. And I'm taking really nice product shots for the online store. So, and it just stays there in the studio. I don't have to worry about, you know, moving it in and out of the camera bag. I don't have to do all that kind of stuff. I can just leave it out on the table. It's fine. You know, I don't have to baby it or do any of that kind of stuff. And the battery grip is actually really comfortable for when I'm working in studio. And since I'm not carrying it around, I don't care if it makes it bigger or any of that kind of stuff. And suddenly, this camera has a whole encore career that is perfectly useful, perfectly legitimate. And on top of that, it's a very good HD video camera, and it can double as that there in the studio if I need that as well. So it's really found, you know, a second life doing these specialty things. And then it leaves me with my other cameras for my field work that have a little higher resolution, little faster buffer, all that kind of stuff. So finding a specialty use for your camera, and it could be any number of things. That's just one example in my world, but your world could be completely different. You could have a whole different set of interests, and maybe one of your older cameras would work great in that scenario. And then number five, and I love number five as well. I like all of these, but number five makes me smile, which is you have a camera for high risk situations, right? In other words, this is a camera you could afford to lose. So let's say it's a river raft trip, or let's say that, you know, it's this road trip where, you know, you just want to leave the camera in the car, you know, so you can just grab it really quick and take shots. Let's say that it's a loaner to someone that, I mean, you're not going to loan a camera to someone that you don't know, but you never really know what people are going to do with items that you loan to them. And especially if you're loaning it to someone just learning photography, they might be a little bit younger. They might not be quite as persnickety as you are in terms of taking care of stuff or, you know, watching where they leave it laying around, all that kind of stuff. Suddenly, you have a perfect camera for those situations. So you can be a good guy or you can be a good gal and say, yeah, I'll loan you a camera. Yeah, you can use it. You can use it for a month or whatever you need, whatever we agree to. Or, yeah, I can go on that river raft trip. I got a camera for that. Or, you know, it just goes on and on, all these different ways that you could use it. But having a camera that it's okay if you lose it in a high-risk situation, because, you know, it's worth it to try, right, for whatever reason. You may come away with some great shots, but if it doesn't work out, you haven't really lost a big investment. So those are my five suggestions for what to do with a digital camera that isn't, you know, on your A-team anymore. So you can convert it to infrared, which is an option I just love. Swap it for other gear that you may need, donate it to education, find a specialty use for it, or use it in high-risk situations. The bottom line is nobody likes to be put out to pasture, not even digital mechanical devices that still can have purpose in life. Pull that camera off the shelf and see what you can do with it. Speaking of infrared, I have the Infrared Photography Workshop lined up for March, mid-March of this year. And this is going to be a terrific workshop that's going to show you so many creative ways that you can approach infrared photography without big investment. If you have a limited budget, we're going to talk about some great infrared work that you can do with a camera that you have right now and how to test your cameras. And the filter that is the best all-purpose filter, and just, you know, go to the races with it. We're going to talk about converting cameras and, you know, what kind of conversion do you want for your particular camera? Maybe a camera that is now not your primary digital camera anymore. We're going to talk about post-production. How do you get the most out of those infrared images? A lot of times people get turned off when they first shoot an IR shot because, you know, they look on the back of the viewfinder and it's just this pinkish red thing and you go, I can't do anything with that. Well, there are a number of things that you can do both at capture and then in post-production. You get a little workflow down and suddenly you can change what you have or what you're seeing on the back of the viewfinder into something really stunning and beautiful. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to cover all the different IR filters and how you can control the look of your IR photography with those filters. And we're going to show you some advanced techniques as well to help you take your artistic photography to the next level. So all of this is going to be covered in our online infrared workshop. Plus, you will have access to Derek's Story Online, unlimited access. You become part of that community as well. And it's just a lot of fun. I'm telling you, I'm discovering stuff every day with infrared photography. And I thought I knew a fair amount about it until I really jumped in with both feet. Everything that I'm learning now, I'm going to share with you during the workshop. You can sign up now. You just go to thenimblephotographer.com, go to workshops, and you'll see that workshop there. Or there's a link in the show notes that will take you directly to the sign-up page where also all the information is. I hope you can join us. This is going to be an excellent workshop. There's going to be a lot of teaching involved. Plus, you'll have ample time to experiment and try your hand at different techniques. It's going to be a winner. I hope you can join us. Turning off your camera on a Zoom call helps save the planet. I ran across this story and I just could not help but to share it. The story is on Petapixel, and I have a link to the original story if you want to go there to see the whole story and any links that may be in the story. But I want to read you a few paragraphs right now. And I have to tell you, I had not thought of this, and I'm really glad that the story surfaced. All right, here we go. If you often find yourself in Zoom meetings in which others on call don't need to see your face, you now have a great excuse for leaving your camera off. It can help save the environment. A new study conducted by researchers at Purdue, Yale, and MIT found that 1 hour of video conferencing emits up to 1 kilogram of carbon dioxide and uses up to 12 liters, 3.2 gallons of water, and requires a piece of land the size of an iPad mini. In their new paper titled, quote, "The Overlooked Environmental Footprint of Increasing Internet Use," end quote, and published in the journal Resources, Conservation, and Recycling, the scientists noted that leaving your camera off during that hour-long call could reduce that footprint by a whopping 96%. Turning off a camera for 15-hour-long meetings every week would reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 9.4 kilograms, 20.7 pounds per month. If 1 million Zoom users did this, they would save 9,000 tons of carbon dioxide, the equivalent of coal-powered energy used by a city of 36,000 in that same month. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you guys have been thinking about this. Maybe not. This was not on my radar. This one was not on my radar. But the thought that when not needed, and we're all on calls where we don't need to be interacting visually, right? We're there to listen. Someone's doing a presentation. Let's say they're doing a PowerPoint presentation and we're part of, you know, a number of people for this hour and a half thing. They don't need to see our face during a PowerPoint presentation. And if someone has a question for us, our name is still there, right? We all know how to use Zoom. Our name is still there. They can say, "Hey, Derek, what do you think about this?" And then I could just answer with audio, or then in that case, maybe I turn on my camera to respond and then turn it back off when it's not necessary. But, you know, and we're doing online workshops now. So I'm thinking, wow, maybe we should be thinking about this as well for certain aspects of our online workshops. Anyway, it just really got my gears turning. I thought you might be interested in it as well. I mean, I think that most of us are spending some amount of time on Zoom right now. And this is a way that we can do it so that it's more environmentally friendly. Thank you, the researchers at Purdue, Yale, and MIT for publishing this report. I have a donation kit for the carefree shipping of found film cameras. I guess we have a lot of recycle, reuse, and repurpose in today's show, don't we? That's okay. It's a good thing, right? It's a good thing. If, while you're around the house, and we're all around the house more than ever now, you get to that back closet where you have a couple film cameras from the days of yore, shall we say, and you're not using them, you don't plan on using them, and you want to find a good home for them, you want to get them in the hands of someone that's going to use them, I can help you with that. I've been repurposing, fixing up, cleaning, testing, and then getting back out there to people who are looking for film cameras. A lot of times they're artists, a lot of times they're young photographers who are looking for a little different look than what they can get with digital cameras. Sometimes it's students, you know, wanting to buy their first film camera and they want to make sure they get a good one. And our site has a very great reputation for delivering quality used film cameras. So it could be any number of those things. And then other things that I'm not even thinking about, you can help with that. By donating a camera, I'll get it fixed up, I'll get it working well, and I'll get it in the hands of someone who will actually use it. You get it out of your closet, you help support our community, and you get a film camera in the hands of someone that's looking for something quality that they might have a much harder time figuring out how to do on eBay. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on the contact form. Let me know what you have in that contact form, and then I'll get back to you and we'll figure it out. I have a donation kit that's really terrific. It has the box, it has the prepaid label. All you have to do is put the box together, you know, tape it up, put the camera stuff in it, let USPS know to pick it up when they deliver your mail, and they'll bring it to me and I will take it from there. This is a terrific program. It's been going great. Those of you who have donated, thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. And the people who now own those cameras appreciate it as well. All right, let's cover just a little bit of Virtual Camera Club news. There's always something else to talk about here, right? We still have that waiting list going for the second session of integrating iPhone into Pro Photography Workflow. We're going to begin the first session here in another week, right? Actually, a week from tomorrow, we're going to start the first session. We've got a full house for that, and they're chomping at the bit and ready to go. And we almost have enough to start a second session. If you want to become part of that second session, then all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and you'll see that there's a waiting list there. Just add your name and email to it. You don't have to pay anything. If we get enough folks for a second session, I'll let you know that you can sign up if you want, and we'll take it from there. And just to refresh what this is the idea of working with just one digital camera, your favorite digital camera, and a late model iPhone, iPhone 10, iPhone 11, iPhone 12, 12 Pro, and how you can use that iPhone essentially to replace the camera bag full of lenses and accessories, and how you can maximize that digital camera for the things that the iPhone doesn't do. And you just create this wonderful workflow where if the iPhone isn't perfect for the job, your digital camera is, and vice versa. And then we also get into how do you maximize efficiency in terms of what to do with those files. How do you work with ProRAW or RAW files on smartphones? And, you know, it just goes on and on. This is another one of those things that once I started digging into it and really kind of taking notes on the workflow, that I go, wow, that's really neat. you'll get tips from other folks in the workshop, because that's just the way these things go. We're going to have a presentation where you get to share some of your favorite images. This is going to be a very good time. If you're interested in that second session, just go to the sign-up form, put your name down, and we'll see what happens. If we get enough folks, I'll let you know, and we'll take it from there. Want to give a big shout-out to our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for supporting this community. Our Inner Circle members are there for us month in and month out. They provide that bedrock support that I think any thriving community needs. They allow me to experiment. They allow me to change the ship and flow in a different direction. They allow me to take risks, which I think is very important right now. We need to try new things. We need to experiment. All of this is made possible in part by our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for showing your support. And there are two ways now you can do the $5 a month that will automatically be billed to your credit card, or you can save a little bit of money and pledge for the entire year at once. Either way is welcomed, and thank you so much. If you're interested, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, take a look, see what you think. Hopefully you'll like it and you will join us. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. They are the folks that have all the answers to your printing questions. And, you know, I get that a lot. People will write me and they'll say, well, what kind of paper should I get? Or, you know, how should I go about doing this project? Can I use my inkjet printer for this or that? You know, all of that information is on the Red River Paper site. They will help you figure out the best paper for the look that you want. They provide tutorials for doing special projects. They have so much information in addition to all the wonderful paper that they carry. And then they have all the goodies to go with it, the envelopes, ink, you know, glassine sleeves. It goes on and on. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. That'll take you over to our landing page there on the Red River Paper site, and just start nosing around. Find some paper that really, you know, sings to you, that you think your images would look great on. Order a box or order a couple boxes and then give it a go and see how you feel about what comes out of the printer. I think you're going to feel this intense sense of pride. That's just my guess. But you got to experience it to find out for yourself. They also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. They are the longest running sponsor of Digital Story, and they are great people as well. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope it was good food for thought. And if you have any ideas about what to do with your digital cameras, share them on our Facebook page. Until then, have a great week. Stay safe, be creative, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.